Yo. Check. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope, so no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and I'm really happy to be back with you live for another day to be on here, sharing some interesting news with you that may or may not be covered by the mainstream. And even if it is, most times it's spun in a way that really is just not getting down to the real issues or the truth of the matter. And so we're going to be talking about all kinds of things tonight, a bunch of election news, more stuff coming up with these elections. And there was a Democratic debate that just ended. We got caught the tail end of it here. But plenty of things to go over tonight. If you want to join the call, feel free to join us. You can call us at 718-717-8296. Make sure you keep your mic muted and you turn off the radio behind you. That way we're not hearing feedback and that'll mess up our audio. So if you do call us, keep that in mind. And make sure you catch us 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, here on UCY.TV. Also at the antimedia.org/radio, either way. We're at the same time, 8 p.m. Pacific, and a bunch of different hosts. And also check out UCY at other times, not only for our show, but there's all kinds of other different journalists and radio hosts on here with a bunch of different perspectives. Maybe they disagree with us as well. You know, there's all kinds of different viewpoints out there, and make sure you hear them out and make your own opinion on these things. And make sure you research the stuff we talk about too, you know, because a lot of this stuff is just, you know, it's... Everything needs to be questioned, whether it comes from us or whether it comes from Fox News or RT or any of these news outlets. You know, make sure you form your own opinion on this stuff. That's really the most important thing, in my opinion, is that everyone is thinking for themselves, so we don't fall into these traps where someone leads us off a cliff. I don't ever plan on doing it, but you know, I'm just saying. Anyway, we're joined in the studio tonight by Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Hey, man. Yeah, I don't want to go off a cliff.
No, only if you're drunk driving and it's by accident. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, if it's Thelma and Louise style, that's kind of like poetic. But if it's voting for a warmonger, not so much.
Yeah, exactly. And there's been several people who maybe many people thought were truth tellers that are out there now rallying around Trump. I mean, the first name that comes to my mind would be Alex Jones. I mean, Alex Jones is out there shilling for Donald Trump now. Many people – now, we've known Alex Jones is a big-time fearmonger, and he's been off the deep end for a long time. But nobody expected him to jump on this Trump thing. But he has, and you know, a bunch of his followers are following him into that.
So, you know, that's something that you got to keep in mind. People that you think, you know, are maybe at the very least trying to break through the mainstream propaganda and stuff, you know, are jumping on the Trump train. I mean, there's been several quote unquote anarchist philosophers that are now supporting Trump and that kind of thing. And there's also people on the other end of the spectrum of the anarchists that are now supporting Bernie Sanders. You know, like I said, just keep that in mind. You never know what people are going to say, how they're going to, opinions are going to change, what they're going to tell you to do. I mean, be wary of it, you know, be very wary of it. Anyway, we got a bunch of stuff. Jake, you got a great article tonight. We're going to cover that. First, I want to introduce our awesome journalist, Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's going on?
Nothing much. I think I finally got your last name down. I'm not going to mess it up anymore.
Okay.
So you've got a great article up today that we're going to talk about as well. First, I want to get your perspective because you actually live out in Ohio, and Trump and Sanders both won in Michigan over the weekend. And this was a pretty big deal, actually, because Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton was favored to win that state by kind of a lot. I think it was at one point she was leading by double digits in the polling numbers. So Sanders really surged there at the end, and it really gave him new fuel for his campaign. And now it definitely seems like he's going to be sticking around. But being that Ohio is kind of in the close proximity to Michigan, and there is kind of similar economic activity, it's in the Rust Belt and that kind of thing. I mean, what do you make of this dynamic over in Michigan with them supporting Trump and Sanders?
The Trump thing has me stumped anywhere, I guess. But I would say in this area of the country, maybe it has to do with that whole kind of maybe the anti-establishment tone that he takes, as off as it might be. And I think also that he plays into people's fears fairly well. You know, the whole xenophobia thing and the idea that I think a lot of people also in this region like the idea that he's a businessman, even though, you know, it's arguable how successful he is, even though he does have a lot of money, of course. I think that appeals. I'm not surprised Hillary didn't do that well. I think in a weird sort of way, maybe Sanders sort of speaks to the same angst that Trump does for a lot of people. He kind of seems anti-establishment as well. So maybe that's the answer. I don't know.
That makes sense. Like, where the anarchist turns to empathy on the Sanders side, it turns to being an asshole on the Trump side.
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah. You know, we've said this before, Trump and Sanders are actually pretty damn similar on economics. On at least the trade issue, the NAFTA, TPP, very nationalistic trade tendencies coming from both of these candidates, for better or for worse. I think that very much had to do with why Trump surged in or won Michigan pretty easily. And now the Bernie thing, which is a little bit more unexpected, I think that has to do a lot with NAFTA. And, you know, NAFTA decimated Michigan. I know, Claire, when you were out here visiting in San Diego, you brought someone with you that was born and raised outside of Detroit. And he was telling me about how not only NAFTA and how that destroyed a lot of manufacturing jobs, but then also the bailouts and how they bailed out the auto industry but left the workers behind, all the pensioners and all the people that collect – people that retired from working in the auto industry kind of got the short end of the stick. And I think that's where Sanders really tapped into that, because he really has been pushing hard on this bailout thing against Hillary Clinton. And Clinton tried to turn it on Sanders and say, oh, well, the bailout included the auto industry. Yeah, but that's the thing. First of all, the auto industry has pretty much left Michigan in many respects. Secondly, as I was saying, the workers got left out of the bailouts. The workers weren't bailed out. Only the actual businesses were bailed out. The people that are the people in the unions, the people that are on pensions, they all got screwed. So like her argument there kind of fell flat, and I think that may be one of the reasons why Sanders surged.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. And that's, again, I think that's why he's doing well. But it's also that whole kind of business thing. I think that they symbolize, both of those candidates symbolize hope to people who have kind of lost it in this whole region of the country, as off as that might be. I think that's kind of what people see. They're looking for almost anything at this point, and I guess grasping at straws is the answer there.
Yeah, you know, and they're looking for something different. I think that explains Trump a little bit. He comes from outside the he's not your typical politician. He comes from outside of the political establishment, that kind of thing. So in that respect, I do see positive trends here in the political spectrum. I don't think Trump is going to do anything good for the country. I mean, the argument can be definitely made that Bernie Sanders is off track. We talked about this in the last show about how he won't touch the defense budget, and you know, he basically is status quo on the defense situation, on the empire, and more or less just wants to raise more revenue, and you know, he is tapping into a lot of the millennial anxiety, which is a bunch of people with a ton of student debt. And then also people that have college education and aren't able to find jobs. I think, you know, Bernie is tapping into that. Unfortunately, he'd have to raise a lot of taxes to try to do what he's talking about doing, when that doesn't have to be the case. I mean, the budget can be taken from this huge defense budget, which in many aspects takes about half of our spending. But again, we talked about this last show. There's a paradox there where you can't talk about the defense budget, because then you'll get dropped. You'll get dropped from all media coverage. It just won't be covered.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders wants to raise taxes on the rich, but I think he has plans for how to pay for a lot of the stuff he's doing without raising taxes on the middle class.
Well,
closing some of the corporate loopholes, for instance, would almost single-handedly
pay for
education.
That's true, but we looked at his tax plan. There's been some journalists that dug into it, and it would raise taxes on pretty much everybody, albeit not that much on lower income people, but it still would. But you know, I mean, we don't need to raise taxes. We got so much money. The country is taxed. After you add up all the permitting and all the little taxes and stuff, I mean, the United States is taxed as high as any country in Western Europe, yet somehow these countries are able to afford all this good stuff for their citizens, and the United States isn't. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just like, where's the money going? Well, there's a huge elephant in the room, and that's the defense budget. Our money is going to support what can arguably be called one of the largest empires that ever exists, albeit not the traditional empire, but it is a huge empire. And, you know, that money is there, but candidates can't talk about it because they won't be able to get elected. And therefore, we're not actually getting into the deeper root causes of the issues that are facing the United States. That's also one of the reasons why we have terrorism and why there's so much instability in the Middle East. I mean, talk about the root issues of the world, and you're not going to be able to be elected to office in the United States of America. And that's just a sad, you know, a sad, sad aspect. And that's why we have to have better media, man. We can't be relying on this mainstream stuff. I mean, a lot of these big media conglomerates share board members with the same people that are making money off of these wars. So it's not any coincidence that they're going to be promoting these wars, and they're going to be not letting any candidate that's going to be talking about them to get any kind of airtime, you know. And that's just how it is right now. And that's something that's got to change if we're going to talk about getting down to the deeper root causes of what's going on in the United States and what's causing all this instability around the world. I want to bring DB in to the program. A little bit late joining us, but he's on the line. What's up, DB?
Hey, what's up, Nick? Just watching the end of that debate and driving home. So sorry, I'm a little late, but yeah, it was a doozy, man. And now you can see he's tapping into two other demographics, which are the retirees who actually want Social Security expanded, and actually the immigrants believe him more than Hillary. So he's got two more contingents for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I've as much as I have reservations about Bernie Sanders, I mean, I want to make one thing clear: I'll take Bernie Sanders any day over Hillary Clinton. I mean, Hillary Clinton is a monster. We're going to talk about another thing that we posted on the Anti-Media today about Hillary Clinton. It's almost daily. If you follow the antimedia.org, we got something new about Hillary Clinton and some horrible things that she's done or doing or horrible people that are financing her campaign. We're going to talk about that. First, I want to go back to Jake.
Oh, I was just going to make a morbid joke about how all Bernie has to do is win out every state and then somehow flip 500 superdelegates and he's on his way to the White House.
It's an uphill battle. It is. But it, you know what? Like I said, I hope he wins over Hillary Clinton because Hillary Clinton is god-awful. So let's talk about Hillary Clinton because there's just so much that we can say about her. And tonight in the debate, she made a reference to how she'd taken on the insurance companies and big and the pharmaceutical companies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the only problem is, and just like when she tonight in the debate, she said she went down to Wall Street and called them out. So she said, unfortunately, she's getting a bunch of funding from Goldman Sachs and all the banking industry. She's now pretty much the largest benefactor of Wall Street money in the race, including the Republicans. I think Rubio was running, you know, was really running up there too. But now Rubio, now that he's basically got no shot, all that money is probably going to start heading over to Hillary Clinton. But it turns out, according to an article that we have posted on the Anti-Media Today, Hillary Clinton is also the largest benefactor of big pharma money. And so this is kind of funny because she's out there saying that she's doing all this, that, and the other for healthcare, and she's going to take on the drug companies and stuff. Well, she's getting most of the money from big pharma. You know, and so this is kind of, you know, ridiculous because, like I said, it's hypocritical. Again, how is she going to sit there and tell us that she's going to do reel in these drug companies and fix the healthcare system and stuff when it's the same companies that are bankrolling her campaign that are making all the money from high drug prices, from all these different pharmaceutical drugs which are very questionable. I mean, you name it, from the opiate epidemic all the way to Obamacare and how that's not really – I mean, Obamacare is pretty much a bailout system for the insurance companies too. I mean, it's not universal health care. It's not single health care. It's not private health care. It's like a big mashup of all the worst factors of all that stuff. It's like privatized health care where we mandate everybody to pay for it. I mean – And Clinton is up there kind of just touting this Obamacare thing, even though it's been it's pretty much from everything I've seen, Obamacare is not what they sold it to be. It's not what it was supposed to be. It's not really fixing very many things except for maybe getting rid of the pre-existing condition portion of insurance and that. And so there are a few positive things that came out of it. But for the most part, the overarching theme here is that Obamacare hasn't done what they said it was going to do. And the fact of the matter is that it was in a major way written up, or at least partially written up by, you know, pharmaceutical lobbyists and insurance company lobbyists. I mean, so it's very much like the TPP in that sense where it's like, hey, we're going to give you this thing. It's going to create a bunch of jobs. Oh, and by the way, it's being written up by the lobbyists from the very industry that this policy is going to affect. So, you know, there's a huge conflict of interest, and Hillary Clinton is standing by this Obamacare thing, and she thinks it's a really good idea. Sanders is standing against it, or at least advocating for a single payer healthcare system. But you know, is anybody really surprised anymore by this stuff? I mean, you name an industry. I mean, Claire, you just wrote about how she's also being bankrolled by the weapons manufacturers. I mean, yeah. Is there a shitty industry that is not bankrolling the Hillary Clinton campaign?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
I was going to mention the weapons thing because it's the same thing. It's like she's saying, you know, gun control in this country, gun control in this country, and she's receiving the most money of any candidate from weapons and weapons manufacturers and the gun lobby. I mean, by far. And here it is again in pharmaceuticals. It's like, what are we supposed to – is anybody believing her anymore?
I heard that the biggest manufacturer of Nazi flags is also bankrolling Clinton.
The Nazis are secretly funding her campaign. I seriously wouldn't doubt that. I mean, Kissinger comes as close as you can get to a modern-day Nazi, and he's pretty close with her too. And I liked – another thing that came up today in the debate, again, back to Sanders, is he called her out on overthrowing the Libyan government, Gaddafi, when they brought up the Benghazi thing. Sanders shifted it over to why the hell were we overthrowing Libya in the first place, which I'm really happy he brought that up. He also brought up Kissinger again, and I'm glad he brought that up too. So if nothing else, Sanders is playing a role in bringing up some of these foreign policy quagmires that Hillary Clinton has been a big part of, you know, and in this aspect, she's so much worse than Trump, you know, and this is why you have to look at the records here. At the very least, we know Hillary Clinton has an awful record. We know Hillary Clinton is being bankrolled by awful special interests. At least Trump doesn't have a record of doing these horrible things. At least Trump says that he's been against the Iraq war. At least he's been vocal about that. And at least he's not being bankrolled by these pharmaceutical companies. I'm looking at the chart right here from the Center of Responsive Politics. Hillary Clinton has received $336,000 from the pharmaceutical industry. Donald Trump has received $1,010 from them. So, I mean, you can't say that Trump is being bankrolled or in the pocket of Big Pharma. But you can say that about Hillary Clinton, and for that you have to give him you have to give him credit where credit is due. Trump is not, you know, Trump is self-financing and he's not taking a bunch of special interest money. Can't stand the stuff he says for the most part, but you know, at least he's not as bad as Hillary Clinton. I mean, this is just, you know, and you know, look, going down the list, Jeb Bush was number 2, Marco Rubio, big surprise, number 3, Chris Christie, number 4, he dropped out already. Jeb Bush also dropped out. Ted Cruz getting 87,000, Bernie Sanders getting 44,000. I mean, once you get below that, it's pretty much, you know, not worth talking about. But Hillary Clinton, far and away, is ahead of all the Republicans in receiving Big Pharma money. So
I'm surprised Sanders took any of it. Isn't that kind of like his?
Well, here's the thing: is that this is coming from like the employees of these companies. So you can't like turn this money down. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And that's also, this isn't even tabulating in super PACs, which are kind of like,
this isn't including super PACs.
Bundles of special interest.
Exactly. So the numbers may be, you know, yeah, exactly. So the numbers for Hillary Clinton may be much, much higher. They won't be higher for Sanders or Trump because they're not really taking super PAC money. But for Hillary Clinton, she is. I mean, this number is probably up into the millions. At this point, I mean, lobbyists for pharmaceuticals spend millions and millions of dollars a year to lobby the government and all that stuff. You know, and so, you know, who knows how much money is actually being spent here? But I tell you what, their candidate is Hillary Clinton. She's not going to help the healthcare system. She's probably going to make it worse. I really don't see how she could make it any better with her current policies. And we already know what she's talking about. Anyway. Past the politics stuff, Florida's the big state coming up. For the Republicans, I know it's winner take all. I'm not sure about how it is for the Democrats, but they're going to be down there in Florida. The debate tonight was in Florida. So that's the big state everyone's going to be watching. I think Florida's like the third or fourth largest state in the country, I think. Huge population, huge delegate count. So whoever wins Florida, that is gonna, I don't know, that if whoever wins Florida, that's huge. If Rubio doesn't win Florida, he's probably gonna drop out of the race, and that's something I'll be really happy about because I can't stand Marco Rubio. All right, let's get into some of these news stories. We got a bunch of great stories all week on the anti-media. First, I want to go over to Jake. It's our pinned story at on the anti-media Facebook page, but it's about how the FBI is and has been trying to get more and more access to your DNA. And this is bad news for people that are into genealogy and people that use Ancestry.com, 23andMe. These are sites where you can go and kind of send in your DNA and they'll analyze it and they'll send it back and they'll tell you, like, you know, where your background is from, what races you are and all of your genetics and all that kind of stuff. But it turns out that the FBI has been petitioning to get access to some people's DNA on these websites, and they've been successful, right?
Yeah. Both those companies have gotten information, you know, are Both of those companies have been solicited by the FBI and local law enforcement, and it's really just kind of the tip of the iceberg, I think, what's happened so far. I mean, what we know so far is simply that they do go after those companies and try and get them to give information. And so it's kind of analogous to the FBI versus Apple situation, which is about, you know, electronic privacy and them trying to have a backdoor into iPhones. It's, you know, they kind of want a backdoor into our genome as well. And I think, I mean, this is just kind of like the tip of the iceberg of what's going to be a very big issue this for the rest of this century, which is, you know, DNA and whether we control our own DNA. I mean, eventually, you know, companies are going to try and, you know, control certain genes and monetize it so that if you find out that you're, you know, have the trait for a certain disease, you know, they're going to try and make money off of that. So this is kind of the beginning of the DNA wars. But, you know, at the very least, I think people that submit their sign up for the service for these genealogy things, I don't think they'd be too happy to find out that that stuff can be legally passed along to the FBI.
Yeah, and you know, DNA science has been taking leaps and bounds in the past couple decades, and now it's to the point. I saw an article today where you can sequence your entire genetic code for like $1,000 now. So you know, this stuff is getting it's starting to become a really serious topic, and so this is one of the discussions that's been going on lately is from privacy advocates is look, you know, DNA is a new frontier in privacy. We got to protect our DNA codes and our genetics from being exploited by either corporate interests or being exploited by governments. You know, and so you know, this is really, really serious. There's a little story here that you wrote about in the article, Jake, about this filmmaker named Michael Oustry. And he kind of had some crazy thing go on with his DNA. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, basically, his DNA, the cops basically matched his DNA up with, or they thought it matched DNA found at a crime scene, because the FBI got a sample of it matched up with basically a sample his father had donated to a database years before. And so because as they say, 34 of 35 alleles, which is a way to measure, it's a unit of DNA or something, because there was a slight match there, they interrogated him, and you can see that without wealth and a lawyer and status,
he may have been found guilty, well, or at least implicated.
I mean, let's be real. I mean, there's thousands, possibly tens of thousands of people sitting in prison right now who are innocent, who were, you know, convicted because of DNA issues. And so it's, I don't know, it's kind of a complex issue.
So here's the crazy thing about this story, about this filmmaker guy, is that, you know, as you said, his dad had given DNA to the Mormon Church, because the Mormon Church has this big genetic project to track family trees and that kind of thing. Apparently they sold the database over to Ancestry.com, right?
Yeah.
And so apparently what's happening here is that when the law enforcement finds DNA at a crime scene, they're able to already search it against these online databases at Ancestry.com, basically, right?
Yeah. Well, the stuff that's made public, which in this case Ancestry had made, they didn't know that this database was public. I don't know how you can not know that, but But then even beyond that, they're attempting to access the non-public database as well. And I just have trouble believing that this isn't common practice. I mean, I feel like almost any proprietary information that corporations own, I feel like is subject to being turned over to the government at this point.
And privatized, and also this data can also be sold to third parties. You know, so when these guys take this DNA from you, and you don't read the fine print, you allow them to sell that information to third parties. Drug companies can get a hold of your DNA, and then they can start sending advertisements to you because of your genetic code. And they may say, oh, looks like you're probably predetermined to have this kind of illness. They start sending you advertisements for certain medications and that kind of thing. I mean, it's this huge, huge rabbit hole here. And the other thing is that the way he was implicated, it was only 34 of 35 alleles from his father. I mean, this is a stretch. You're talking about, you know, DNA that seemed close to your dad's was found in a crime scene. Therefore, we're going to accuse you of doing the crime. I mean, this is, you know, these kind of practices could lead to even more people being falsely accused and falsely incriminated. And as you said, if it weren't for this guy being a pretty influential filmmaker, he probably has a lot of resources. He's able to hire a good lawyer. I mean, if you're a poor person and this happens to you, chances are you're going to wind up in prison over this kind of shit.
Right, because DNA, I mean, it's almost like the derivatives that the banking industry uses. Like, people are confused by it, so they can't really crack down or regulate it. In the same way, when introduced in a court of law, DNA evidence is very intimidating and almost immediately used to convict people when it can be flawed or incomplete. And so I don't know, it's kind of scary to think that you know, the police can so easily ascertain your DNA samples and do stuff like that. But
yeah, so this is a pretty complex topic, and as 23andMe and Ancestry.com, they're becoming ever more popular. I've known plenty of friends and family that I've already used the service and stuff. I was thinking about using it as well, but after reading stuff like this, I'm maybe going to wait around until there's a new DNA service that promises more privacy and isn't going to share your information with the government. Those will probably be coming soon. In fact, there probably already are some startups that are already doing that. I haven't looked too far into it. But you know, the title of the article, if you want to look further in, it's called "The iPhone is just the Beginning. FBI Already Accessing Your DNA." It's on theantimedia.org.
To be fair, but these companies have both released transparency reports, and they claim that any time law enforcement asks for your record, that they will tell you at least. So that's a disclaimer there, that they're at least trying to be somewhat transparent, but I'm not sure that they did that. I don't think they did that until a few journalists started poking holes in their privacy policy. So
there you go. I mean, I guess that's kind of a theme that we see going here is they'll do things that we don't know that they're going to do, or they'll abuse our data. I mean, Google, Facebook, all the people that you give any kind of data to, most of the apps that people use, they take that data. There's a whole industry now called big data. They take that data, package it up into a a big informational packet, and they sell it to advertisers, marketers, large corporations, McDonald's, drug companies, you name it. They take the data, they analyze it, and they try to make better advertisements for you to go buy more stuff. And so, you know, that stuff's going on, you know, and so we got to be wary of it, and you know, just be careful about how we share our information. Read the fine print. I guess that's the biggest thing. Read the fine print. Find out what they're going to do with it. Next, I want to go over to an article that Claire has on the Antimedia Today as well, and this one is big, and this is kind of a trend that we're seeing all over the country and all over the world, is yet another nuclear reactor is leaking, and now it's getting out right just outside of Miami, which is a huge city, and now this thing is leaking into the Biscayne Bay, and it's threatening the Everglades. And I mean, this is just another one. I mean, when what was the last one we covered recently outside of L.A.? We're covering them in the Midwest. There's one outside of New York City. I mean, nuclear reactors everywhere around the country leaking. They just shut one down here in on the north end of San Diego because it had cracks in it. I mean, Claire, what can you tell us about this nuclear reactor in Florida?
Okay, so when I was researching this, it looks like there have been a number of problems with this particular plant, which is Turkey Point. And I guess part of the problem is that it does not have cooling towers, which is a similar problem to the plant's Indian Point, which is outside of New York City. It's an older model, and instead of using cooling towers, they actually they use the natural water of the canals that kind of flow nearby. And I could be wrong because I haven't thoroughly looked into this particular plant, but at least that's the case in Indian Point. And in doing so, there is supposed to be basically this filtration, and it's supposed to work just fine, but they should be updated. The plant should be kind of overhauled and modernized, and it has not been. And they, a couple years ago, went to expand its use and increase the amount of energy it was outputting, and that was when the problems began. And it just now there has been a leak of tritium into the canals. It's 215 times the levels that it should be. And tritium itself, from what I understand from talking to a couple of insiders, is not necessarily a big deal in itself. It's not necessarily a harmful radioactive element, if there is such a thing. But it does act as a precursor because it expands and spreads more quickly than other radioactive contaminants. And so when you see tritium in the water, it's a sign that almost guaranteed that something else is going to follow. So this plant is having problems. And it could be detrimental to a protected coral reef in Biscayne Bay, which is a really big deal. It's one of the biggest in the world. So this is pretty big deal.
You know, and I think that, you know, it is a big issue. These nuclear reactors are all over the country, you know, and I've read reports that say every nuclear reactor leaks a little bit. Many times it's not something to be concerned with, but, you know, a lot of times it's just turns into this issue like we're seeing here outside of Miami, where we see this leak start to happen, and it's like, oh, shit, now what do we do? The one outside of New York, which we're probably going to have an update soon, I mean, this thing could literally make the entire area of New York City uninhabitable, you know, if something bad were to happen out there. And the people in charge of making sure it stays safe and that it's not, you know, causing a bunch of problems are pretty much covering up all these issues, and they're not doing, you know, what needs to be done to fix it, you know. And so, you know, they run these reactors for 20, 30 years. They make all kinds of shitloads of money off of them, and these power companies make who knows how many billions of dollars off of these nuclear reactors. Yet when it comes time to clean them up, it's like, well, who's going to be doing the cleanup? And many times, which is at least partially the case here in San Diego, is the taxpayer winds up footing the bill for the cleanup, you know. And it's, again, it's this issue that we face where it's like we're going to privatize these horrible things and let these companies make a shitload of money off of them. And then when they mess it up, well, then the taxpayer bails them out and they pay for the cleanup.
Privatize the profits, socialize the responsibility.
Exactly.
There was also, I've been reading a book about kind of the history of nuclear power, and it appears like this is yet another example, even though it happens like mostly in the 60s and 70s, of kind of progress attempting to jump ahead of the science and before it was thoroughly investigated, like what actually needs to be done and plans for the future and such, you know, possible problems down the road, the industry was big on selling a number of these plants, and they just suddenly popped up all over the country and got way ahead of themselves. And so a bunch of them were implemented and never really should have been. So this is yet again, you know, this horrible idea of, like, not thoroughly researching the science before we implement it.
Yeah, and then that seems to be something that we see across many, many different industries, whether it's biotech with the whole glyphosate issue that we're now finally getting to, you know, finally realizing what's going on with that. All these pesticides that have forever been polluting, the PCBs, you know, that are now polluting a bunch of the waterways. Fracking, which is pretty one of the more recent examples. You know, they start fracking the entire country all over the place, and now we start finding out, oh, well, the fracking wastewater is causing cancer, fracking is causing earthquakes. I mean, you know, it's the money, really, the money issue here is that they come up with this new science, and it's like, oh, great, we have this new technology, and we can make a bunch of money with it. Let's just go ahead and put it everywhere and start using it all over the place without thoroughly examining the risks. Or at least, you know, taking the precautions to minimize the risks until it's too late. And by the time it's too late, then what? You know, and it, just like in this recent, they're trying to pass a new environmental update. And Claire wrote about this. I think he wrote about it once or twice. But, you know, again, with the PCBs, these go back to Monsanto. These are poisoning all kinds of waterways around the world. San Diego has launched a lawsuit. Berkeley has launched a lawsuit. Up in Washington has launched a lawsuit. I think there's at least six lawsuits now against Monsanto over these PCBs, which were used in many different industries. They were banned, I think, in the 60s or 70s, but they still persist in the environment. Now Monsanto is getting sued by all these different cities and stuff. But now in the new environmental bill, they slipped a new Monsanto Protection Act into this thing where they say, well, Monsanto's not going to be on the hook and no one's going to be able to sue them for PCB contamination. You know, and so once again, it's like not only do our regulatory agencies, whether it's the FDA, the USDA, or the EPA, whatever, they go ahead and like authorize the use of these horrible things. They didn't do their job in the first place. Then when it comes out later on, many times because of independent research and journalists digging into it, that something has gone wrong, the government goes in and bails out the companies. In this case with Monsanto and in many cases with these nuclear reactors, the energy companies aren't held responsible for their leaks either, you know? And it's just like how much of this stuff is the American public going to put up with? Where we get ripped off by and charge high rates by all these companies for instance, with energy, and then when they're done making money off us and it winds up that they're killing us with radiation or with, you know, other pollutants, and then we got to pay for ourselves to clean up a mess that they made that's making us sick, and we got to pay for it. I mean, how much of it can we take? It's ridiculous.
And, you know, I think, honestly, that the only way to really deal with any of this anymore, voting obviously does not do much of anything at all. And I think maybe withdrawing from spending money on these corporations as much as humanly possible is really the only way to send the message, because obviously that's all they care about.
Pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much it. Voting with our money and our economics is probably the most effective way to go about this stuff at this point. So, yeah, go check that story out and check out all of our nuclear coverage on the anti-media. We've been keeping up to date on all of these disasters. There's also the issue of, like, all these old uranium mines that they happen to be on a bunch of Native American reservation lands and things like that. All these mines are still leaking pollutants, uranium, and other mining chemicals. And so there's a bunch of that stuff still going on, and a bunch of Native American tribes that are still trying to get answers from the EPA and trying to get, you know, resolutions or cleanups or something, something done, but nothing's happening, you know. And so these are issues that we're covering closely on the anti-media. Go check out all the nuclear related stuff over there, because it's something that we really need to look at, especially now with all this alternative energy. And Jake's actually written about this pretty extensively on the anti-media as well. You know, alternative energy, sustainable energy, green energy, whatever you want to call it, it's becoming very much economically feasible, affordable, and it's getting to be to the point where soon it's actually going to be more cost effective than fossil fuels even. And you know, there's no reason why we need nuclear plants anymore. There's no reason why we need coal plants. There's no reason why we need fracking anymore. When we can switch over to more sustainable resources and stuff, one of the reasons why we're not is, well, because these companies and these industries have a huge grip on the government, you know, and so they a lot of, you know, government contracts go to the fossil fuels. The U.S. Military is the single largest entity of that consumes fossil fuels in the whole earth, you know, and so that's a big part of the problem. On that topic, we got another fossil fuel consuming story here on the anti-media about drones. The Pentagon just admitted that they have been using spy drones on the U.S. public, on U.S. soil, and this is something that I guess you can call many conspiracy theorists have been warning about it, that there's going to be drones flying over the United States. And yeah, we've got those quad rotor drones and the cops got drones and stuff. But nobody thought that there were going to be military drones like the Predator drones and the Reaper drones flying over the United States. But guess what? They are, and they already have been.
I guarantee you it's more insidious than that. We already know DARPA has been developing insect drones, and I guarantee you they have deployed them for spying purposes.
Yeah, I mean,
this is I'm predicting this now. I guarantee you within the next 5 to 10 years, it'll be confirmed that they're using insect-sized drones to spy on us.
This is one of the issues that we have with the whole DARPA thing, right? And you know, they're making these drones smaller and smaller, and they're getting more advanced. And again, this is it goes back to what we were just talking about with Claire, is the science that they got going on is outpacing any kind of accountability as well, you know. And so they're flying surveillance drones, and there's not even really laws on the books yet that would police this kind of stuff. And I mean, there is posse comitatus that says, you know, we're not supposed to use the military on U.S. soil, but apparently they are. They're doing it, you know. And so you got to wonder, it's, you know, where does it stop? You know, these drones flying over, looking at us, who knows when and where. Some of them fly so high you can't even see them sometimes, and they blend in with the sky. They're hard to spot. Can't hear them when they're flying way up there. You know, and so it's a good question, man. And it's stuff that people have been talking about for a while now. When are the drones going to be here? Well, they've already been.
Yeah, they're not going to announce it and have a ribbon cutting ceremony to say that the age of the drones is here. They're
exactly.
Just going to deploy them.
Exactly. And you know, I think anybody that's been paying attention kind of expected this to come, right? We knew it was coming. We knew that they're flying surveillance drones over the United States. We're just waiting for them to officially announce it. That came out today. Came out this morning. So the next question here, the next step is, you know, we know they're flying surveillance drones now. They've admitted to it. When, if not already, are they going to start arming these things? And Claire recently wrote about this on the anti-media as well. What state was it? New Jersey? Claire, you remember?
It's Connecticut.
Connecticut.
North Dakota already has it.
Yeah, so North Dakota state level has already authorized the use of armed drones by the police, and now the Connecticut cops are pushing for armed drones as well.
Well, at least less than lethal, supposedly. I mean, but you know where that's leading.
Less than lethal. Isn't that what, like, tasers and stuff are supposed to be? But tasers kill people, many people.
Is that the name of an Incubus album?
You know, so they admit today that they're flying surveillance drones. How long is it going to be before they start flying armed drones? Or are they already doing it and they just haven't admitted to it yet? You know, this is a very big debate that needs to be had. And unfortunately, looks like the American public just shrugged it off. You know what I mean? It's, oh, they're flying drones over the U.S. Oh, whatever, big deal. You know, turn back on the reality TV. You know,
there's
cares?
Hundreds of classified programs going on right now that we're not going to know about now because they're classified. We'll find out about them when they're declassified years, decades from now. And we know in researching DARPA that a great many classified programs that are going on in DARPA right now involve metadata tracking and various kinds of surveillance. They're tracking us online, they're tracking us in person, they're actively working to get the Internet of Things up so we have a basically gridded society in which, you know, everything is being tracked and monitored. I mean, you can poo-poo conspiracy theories as much as you want, especially the ones that talk about kind of a, you know, overarching grid that monitors us. But I mean, it kind of already exists. We kind of already know that it's happening. So now the battle, to me, it seems like, is in waking people up to the fact that it matters, because most people don't think it matters right now. I don't know how, but
yeah. And you know, this, like I said, this story kind of got brushed off. You know, it's oh, they're flying drones. Okay, cool. You know, now we know. So people aren't taking it seriously, but I'll tell you what, we got a meme that just went up on the anti-media about this too. And Glenn Greenwald kind of made a comment on it. One of our drone strikes just killed 150 people in Somalia. 150 people. Now they say they're all terrorists. Now keep in mind, basically anyone in any of these areas, any man that is within what they call fighting age, which I think it's like between like 14 and like 60, any man that's in that area that gets killed by a strike is going to be classified a terrorist, whether they are or not.
If you get killed, you're a terrorist.
Exactly. If our strikes hit you, you're a terrorist. I mean, this is literally the policy of the United States. So a drone strike kills 150 in Somalia. Well, they're going to sit there and they're going to just say, yeah, they were all terrorists, because that's what our policy says. That's what we call people that get killed in our drone strikes.
Think about where this is leading, though. Think about that. People don't care about these 150 people who obviously aren't all terrorists being killed because they're somewhere else. Now, we also have drones, which the police want to be able to arm, which they're already spying on us with over here. So when they arm the drones here and start killing people, is that when everybody's going to start caring? I mean, there is no end to this.
Yeah,
this is going to happen. You can just see it.
This is the sad thing, and maybe it's the brainwashing, maybe it's the desensitizing that's gone on. I talked to some people that were over in some people that were in Ferguson during the riots, and you know, briefly after the time when Mike Brown was shot dead by Darren Wilson and that kind of thing. And people went over to, like, some people that I knew that were out there were like staying in hotels that were in like the next town over, a little bit outside of St. Louis and stuff like that. And people were literally in the next town over, didn't give a shit. You know what I'm saying? And so we're talking about these drones now flying over the United States. We're talking about two states contemplating arming drones. And Claire, you throwing out this suggestion that, well, you know, what's going to happen when the drones are armed and they start killing people? I'll tell you what's going to happen. Nothing. Nobody's going to give a shit unless it hits their own house or their neighbor or one of their friends' houses or their family members' houses. And then they're probably going to be turning into extremely radicalized people, just like it's going on, exactly like what's going on in the Middle East, you know. And this is the sad thing. The U.S. public has become so apathetic that, I mean, I don't know what they have to do. I mean, our cops are killing over 1,000 people a year now. And literally, the majority of the population could give two shits about it. You know, yeah, there are activist communities out there trying to spread the message about police brutality and stuff. But the majority of people don't give a shit until it happens to them.
You know? Even then they don't care.
Yeah, and even then sometimes they don't even care.
It's already happened. I mean, it's already happening. You know, the police are already killing people, and what do they say that it was that it's protected? They get off every single time. So what's to think that when there's an accidental drone killing, that they're not going to use the same excuse?
Exactly.
You know, this is where I think that I might differ with some activists. I think this is why it's fruitless to try to, quote-unquote, wake everybody up or alert everybody to what's going on, because obviously the apathy is so ingrained and so fundamental to this culture, it is going to be impossible to get everybody to care. And so, you know, kind of, it's almost as if you need to work with people who are willing and who are able and who know what's going on, and just kind of, I hate to say it, but almost give up on the rest of them and let them be dragged along with you when the change occurs, because, I mean, the apathy is really stunning.
That's what Jade Helm was all about, was testing the people to see how they would react to certain things. And what Claire is saying is completely right. There's a percentage that won't wake up till it's way too late, and they're preparing for like a calling, so to speak.
Yeah, it's like people that are in a coma, you still have to feed them, you know?
You know, and I think people in the United States, we've been brainwashed from the day we start being able to read and learn to speak, and we're put in front of a TV to accept violence. You know, we're all citizens, or at least residents, for the people living here in the U.S. of these, at least at this moment in time, the biggest and most violent empire that's on the face of the earth right now. And so we've been conditioned from the time we're kids to accept violence pretty much unconditionally, you know. And when a hospital gets hit in Afghanistan that's run by a Nobel-winning Peace Prize nonprofit, it doesn't really cause too much of a stir. Over a million Muslims dead, thanks to our destabilization of the Middle East and in particular Iraq. No one really gives too much of a shit about that. Ongoing, the longest war in our history, which is Afghanistan. Nobody really cares about ending that. I mean, we're heavily conditioned to accept violence. And I think part of our job at the anti-media is to decondition people from that violence and understand that violence is violence, no matter who it's being done to. It doesn't matter if it's a kid in the Middle East or a school being shot up down the street or drug war violence down in just south of the border. I mean, violence is violence, and people are dying because of U.S. policies. We've got to decondition people from being willing to accept that, because as we're seeing with, first we saw it with the militarization of the police, and now the cops are killing 1,000 people a year. Now we're seeing it with the drones, and they're coming over surveillancing, and soon they're going to be armed and killing people. And if we don't combat that apathy of violence, just like what's going on just outside of Ferguson, where the towns next door don't even care about what's going on there, you know, we're going to see violence from the government become extremely, extremely widespread in the United States, because they're going to get away with it. So we got to combat that idea that violence is okay at any level.
I think people are expecting the military to save them if anything were to happen. And they're not going to save us if we're not awake. I mean, they honestly will not fight for people that don't want them to.
Well, yeah. And then you got that other robot that Jake recently wrote about that is first going to come take your jobs, and then it's going to go replace everyone in the military, and then it's going to replace all the cops. You know, so there aren't going to be any good cops left to stand up and say, okay, well, maybe we're going a little too far here with these drones, guys. Because there aren't going to be any human cops left to disobey orders. There aren't going to be any whistleblowers left to, like Chelsea Manning, to say, hey, guys, they're lying to you in Iraq. They're not doing what they're saying they're doing. Because all of these things are going to be replaced by robots and drones and androids and shit like that. If we don't act soon, we're gonna get on this very slippery slope that's going to be impossible to recover on. You know, and so I think now we got to combat this idea of violence at every level. Violence is not okay, whether it's in Iraq, Libya, Syria, Somalia, Mexico, or down the street at the elementary school that's probably going to get shot up sometime next week, because we've got this huge issue of, you know, school shootings in the United States as well. Violence is not okay anywhere, and if we don't combat that, the whole country and probably the whole planet is going to be consumed by it. And so that's what we got to fight against right now. We got to start at home with your family, with your friends. Get them aware of all the violence taking place around the world with their money in their name. Thank you all for tuning in. Anti-Media Radio, 5 days a week.